it's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos, maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
The Live Love Memphis team is the best team, certainly for my money. I recommend you go see them. Call them up, 901-625-5200. Her name is Jennifer Carstensen. She's put together a wonderful, award-winning, very successful team over at Live Love. And whether it's in DeSoto County, whether it's in Nashville, they've grown. And they've grown with success. And their mission, the reason they've been successful, is to improve the city of Memphis. You do that by getting folks out of renting situations, getting them in home ownership situations. You do it, too, by getting folks' homes sold for more money than they thought they could get. Jennifer's key is she prices it right from the get-go so that it doesn't leave you hanging out on the market for weeks, for months, having to decrease the price. Price it right from the get-go. Get with an expert. If you're interviewing realtors, you certainly want to make Jennifer one of them. 901-625-5200. It's the Live Love Memphis, Live Love Nash, and Live Love DeSoto teams at the real estate agency.
Every day around this time, we do the rundowns. Go.
Yeah, we'll start with the big news yesterday, and it was, you know, of all things, the WNBA. The WNBA commissioner got called to the carpet yesterday by Nafisa Collier from the Minnesota Lynx. By the way, Las Vegas Aces advanced to the WNBA finals last night in overtime. Real quick, shout out to the Indiana Fever, man. I mean, I mean, they were injured like that.
Is that a six seed?
That sounds right, and mostly because of injury, right? Like,
pretty crazy.
They lost everybody. They lost Sophie Cunningham. They lost Caitlin Clark. They lost Kelsey Mitchell last night. They lost McDonald. They lost, you know, it feels like every relevant player that they had at some point other than Aaliyah Boston and Lexi Hull. I mean, they were – and Kelsey until last night. That team was like – it was amazing. They were playing for each other. You know, I mean, that was all it was about. It's like they were as decimated as those Grizzlies teams, you know, when they had like 40 players or whatever. And they were a game away from the damn finals.
They might have took it overtime.
So credit to that group, man. I watched the end of it last night, and I bet the Aces live. But I still felt in my heart, you know,
clearly,
as you put down Black Beauty, you know, what a run for you. You know, what a run for this horse. But you got to go. You got to go, Seabiscuit. You can't keep playing.
Aces Mercury in the finals.
By the way, real quick, I like the Mercury.
Okay.
Former Portland Trail Blazers assistant Nate Tibbetts is the coach of the Mercury.
Good to know.
And Alyssa Thomas, who is basically the WNBA Jokic.
Okay.
So I like them in the upset. Slight upset, not a big one, but a slight one. Anyway, Nafisa Collier is not playing. She was the star player of the Minnesota Lynx, were the one seed that got put out by the Phoenix Mercury. And in her, you know, end of season availability, she had a prepared speech where she essentially said, "We have the best players in the world. We have the best fans in the world. But right now we have the worst leadership in the world." And, you know, she talked about comments that Kathy Engelbert, who is the commissioner, had made to her about Caitlin Clark and how Caitlin Clark should be grateful for the WNBA, because without the WNBA, she wouldn't have the sponsorship and the money that she has. She said, "It's clear there's no intention of accepting there's a problem when it comes to key issues. The league has made it clear it isn't about innovation. It isn't about collaboration. It's about control and power. Our leadership's ability to being held accountable is to suppress everyone's voices by handing out fines. I'm not concerned about a fine. I'm concerned about the future of our sport." Nafisa Collier, for background, she fractured her ankle at the end of the final game of the series against the Mercury. It was a physical play. I don't think it was a foul. I think it was sort of incidental contact. Alyssa Thomas has just as much a right to that basketball as Nafisa does. But it was about the sort of entirety of the season, how it's, from what I gather, a smaller pool of officials. So it always ends up being the same referees virtually, you know, give or take, and that there's, you know, no progress, no improvement from those officials, et cetera. And that the salaries are not where they should be based on the popularity of the league. you know, based on the ticket sales, things like that. Basically just not keeping up with the growing popularity. And, you know, listen, I'm sure these conversations are held behind closed doors all the time, but the fact that Nafisa took them public felt like, I mean, an unprecedented step here for the, for those players.
Yeah. It'd be one thing just to have said, you know, you've got issues with officiating, with compensation. Those have been issues that have been brought up before. She mentioned the state of the overall product is bad, but to go directly after the commissioner and to use comments from a private conversation to do it, I mean, I can't remember the last time we've seen an athlete in their sport take it to this level. Again, talking about issues, those kinds of things, but she clearly goes directly after Kathy with these comments that, listen, we don't, you know, Kathy's had a response to this in terms of a release. She said that, you know, sort of the tenor of their conversation, she seemed to indicate had been adjusted, the conversation with her and Nafisa, and said that she thought, you know, she was disappointed by that. But what she didn't say is that that Kyrie was lying,
right,
about their
right.
private conversations.
Right.
And so here's what I'm getting to. The officiating stuff, the compensation stuff, they're all huge problems with the league that need to be addressed. But what people are going to hook into, if true, is the commissioner, and particularly as it relates to the Caitlin Clark part of this conversation, saying that the $16 million that she's earned off the court in endorsements is a result of the platform she's on, the WNBA?
Yep.
Like, that's a lie, is what it is. And also talking like the players should be on their knees if she used that kind of language.
Yeah.
I'll go back to Caitlin, because clearly America loves Caitlin Clark. And for this commissioner to be taking the credit for what Caitlin Clark had done in building her brand as a college player, she was going to, wherever she went, whatever had happened, Nike was going to follow, whatever else. This ain't because she made it to the WNBA. Mm-hmm. I cannot believe, if that is true, mm-hmm. Kathy said that, she has lost touch with the league that she governs. You can't talk like that. And so Collier went straight to it again. If these comments are true, and it comes from a private conversation, so you have to say that. But again, I would go back to, there's nothing in Engelbert's statement that says Kyrie's a lie. You know, and these strongest statements that someone is making against you, typically you would say, oh, no, that's not a rephrasing of the conversation or a change of tenor. That's a lie. I didn't say that. So it seems like to me, again, this is where we're getting the beginning of this. Seems like to me, you know, your commissioner here is going to have a hard time governing based on, I'll just say it, the condescending way
mm-hmm.
that she looks and treats her players. She looks at and treats her players. Are we kidding? If this is sort of her tone and Collier has exposed it, it's going to get you gone.
Yeah. No, I think that's going to happen.
Surprised we didn't see a stronger denial from Engelbert.
Well, maybe because she actually said those things.
But unless the young lady was recording it.
Right.
My point?
Yeah. No, I mean,
you could push back and tell your story.
You could tell the story
a little bit better than I'm disappointed, you know, in the how she, you know, the tenor of our conversation, how she interpreted it. You know, that's a beating around the bush,
right?
I mean, it just is,
right? Yeah, it's one of those deals, you know. I like, you know, there's, I don't necessarily think that the commissioner of a league has to be in lockstep with the – like, we see the, like, commissioners and players at odds all the time, right? Or more so owners and players at odds all the time. And the commissioner always takes the side of the owners, right? Like, that's usually the way it happens. It's how we get to lockouts. It's how, you know, all these different things happen. But I think with a – you know, with an upstart, which – and I still consider the WNBA an upstart. With an upstart like that, I think it's very important – you know, that they are actually in lockstep with the players and that everybody is on the same page about the growth. I don't know enough about what Kathy Engelbert does in the day-to-day. I will say, I think some of what Nafisa said, like everybody's like, oh, man, you know. And I think some of what she said was very valid. I think some of what she said was very valid in terms of the finances, in terms of the, you know, if she's indeed said some of those things that she said, it's just misguided thinking, right? And it's just like, that's probably not the right person for that role. No question about that. I do think the WNBA, its fans, its players, at times feel like they're getting a worse shake than they actually get, like in terms of quote-unquote protection, in terms of all these different things. I think Nafisa is there's some sour grapes involved. because the Lynx got eliminated. She got hurt. The coach, like that coach losing her mind the way she did was unserious. Like that was such a bad look for the league. But that's how that coach carried herself, saying "F you" to the fans. I mean, there's still a lot of growth that the people that are playing and coaching in this league need to do, right, to be taken seriously on that. Like, because if Tuomas Isolo, for example, did that, like if he was thrown out and he was cussing at the fans of the opposing team, like it would be a horrific look for the franchise. And so I think there are some sour grapes involved in the timing of this. That doesn't invalidate, however, the substance of the message. And I think the substance of the message is that, listen, you need new leadership, period, point blank. It feels like they're going to get it. You know, the players are unanimous behind this. The main thing is just the money, right? Like, we can talk about all the other stuff, but it's just the money. It's like you got to get more money for your players. I mean, I think that's the, you know, I know they had some media deals they negotiated, but all this other stuff is just window dressing to me, like officiating, protection, blah, 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 blah. It's about we need more money for our people. So if you can't get us more money, then we need somebody else who can get us more money. I mean, that's at the end of the day. And I think the owners are probably on board with that too. And I don't know what their splits are. I don't know how profitable they are. It's not really my, my expertise. But I think it's a good product. I think you need somebody that really fully believes in it, 10 toes down, with the players in unison. Sounds like Kathy Engelbert is not that person. So my expectation, and I think the Sports Business Journal reported that she would be out after the new CBA anyway. Mm-hmm. But like, I don't even think I'd want her doing the CBA if she's going to be out, you know, right after. So
I think most of the players of that league are going to side with Collier and say she's telling the truth. And Engelbert doesn't have a chance in heck to lead this league anymore.
Yeah, but
so it needs to be over. I know she's taking credit for the media rights deal. Again, I would tell you, you know, women's basketball was a powerhouse, you know, because of what Caitlin and what Angel were doing. Like, there was probably an increase coming one way or the other. And so my point would be, not that Kathy Engelbert didn't have anything to do with that, but to try to take full credit, they should be on their knees for the media rights deal that I got them. Like, stop. The popularity of the game's going up, and you had two stars coming in.
Right.
A freaking Magic Johnson, Larry Bird moment. Like, that's helped you capitalize as well. And so to make this all about me, if true, again, these come out of private conversations, it's just you know, you've been exposed. So the good that you have done, it's going to get dismissed.
Right.
Very quickly. And yes, I mean, it just seems at this point with where the game is and how popular it's become, that the players would get a larger portion of these media rights deals. In some cases, it's still an absolute joke with the ranking.
Yeah, it is. And that will change very soon, I expect. But, I mean, a player going public like that. I mean, I remember the NBA lockout, you know. I mean, you'd have, what was that, 2011, LeBron and them were down here and they were talking about, I don't remember what they wanted or what they needed. Or, I mean, honestly, I was watching PTI yesterday and, you know, the WNBA really should. And if the players are serious about getting the things, they're going to have to lock out. I mean, that's the only way you get it, right? I mean, you don't get it by just, you know, conceding and just keep playing. You know, you have to do extreme things if you want extreme things. So they should consider a lockout. Caitlin Clark, they're going to have to recruit her to be front of the line, right? And I think that's why Paige Beckers, Angel Reese, Caitlin Clark, Nafisa mentioned those three ladies intentionally, because they have the biggest fan bases individually. And so, you know, if you get those three on board, that's where you'll get the real change, you know, because the fans will be outraged and, you know, you'll watch that money dry up. So, but if they really want all those things, they're going to have to do something that maybe they've had lockouts before and I'm not sure, but it feels like that's the only way it's going to work. I mean, if the NBA had to do it to get what they wanted, it feels like the WNBA is going to have to do the same thing. So, but that was the first step, you know, that was the first step towards some change in the WNBA. And good on Nafisa for, you know, that's not an easy thing to do, to take that on your own. She's up there by herself. I mean, I know the player supported her afterward, but that's her ultimately up there on that podium, you know, going at the commissioner publicly. So I admire her for doing that. She's a great player, and we'll see what happens. But, yeah, crazy drama in the WNBA yesterday.
All right, Cleveland Browns are benching Joe Flacco. They're turning to a rookie quarterback. It's not Shedeur Sanders. It's Dylan Gabriel, who they drafted higher, took him in the third round than they did Shedeur. And Dylan Gabriel, from our eyeballs and just about everything every expert has written, was better in the preseason than Shedeur Sanders was. They announced the change this morning. It was Adam Schefter that ended up that I saw it first from. And again, you know, we've even seen comments, I think it was a couple of weeks back, where Shedeur Sanders was being interviewed, and you'd ask, well, he's a third-string quarterback. They typically don't get interviewed. But again, Shedeur Sanders is still a story. And so those reporters had floated over there to him, and he, you know, I'm ready to play. This was while Joe was still the starter. Mm. And it just reminded me again how, you know, Marcus Spears said it. Man, you're not the story. You're the third-string quarterback who should just be working and saying, I'm on a great roster, and I'm doing everything I can to get better. But instead, it was more of, man, you know, I'm ready, and frankly, it came off as I should be playing. Now, there's an argument that he should be, and I'm not going to push back against that whatsoever, but clearly Dillon Gabriel, and he had the one comments, at halftime of that game or whatever, when the sideline reporter asked him about, you know, competing, he's talking about entertainers and competitors, but set that to the side, the guy was just more professional and better the whole way through, and so he has probably earned this shot. Again, I would question the way that Cleveland handled the draft in the first place and put Shedeur in this position. But Dillon Gabriel has earned it. And frankly, Joe Flacco was getting you nowhere. Back to the point, the Cleveland Browns are a ship going nowhere with a defense, quite frankly, that could compete right now, a playoff level defense, maybe even better. You know, why continue to throw Joe Flacco, who was just on a couch a couple of years ago when we last saw him with Indy was bad?
Yep.
Why continue to throw him out there, more to the point, to not learn anything about Dillon Gabriel or Shedeur Sanders? It was time to make the switch, just like it was time for the Giants to make the switch. And so we get it. Dillon Gabriel, I've doubted him.
Yeah.
I've doubted the chance he's got in the NFL. He's tiny out there. But what he does is get the ball out of his hands and get it done. He runs the offense. And so, you know, in terms of what to expect from him, probably an upgrade from what Joe Flacco was able to give you at his ripe old age. But that said, it's still so confusing. Because, and maybe that's what you do for the rest of the season. Maybe that if I was in that front office, which is an absolute mess, obviously, with the situation, and that goes up to ownership with paying Deshaun, but I would use the rest of the season to see what I've got with both of them.
Absolutely.
And again, I hesitate to say that, because if Dillon Gabriel is great, like we said, he's earned this spot, this chance to get the job. And if he's great, he's like winning a couple games.
Yep.
And you go to Shedeur Sanders, well, I don't know that that's the right way to run it either.
Right.
But they have to come out of this season knowing which one is the guy. That's what they need to do. Use the rest of the year for it. I don't care what you say to the defense, and I can completely understand them looking at you and rolling your eyes with where this franchise is right now. But that has got to be the focus for Cleveland at this point, is looking at both of them throughout the rest of this regular season. Because let's be real. I mean, Dillon Gabriel, yes, professional. Yes, looks like he can run an offense. But in terms of making the Browns a threat in the AFC North, my hopes aren't high. And so play it out.
Yep.
Play both of them. You know, Shedeur might be too arrogant to handle it. He may not be ready. He may be immature in terms of that, you know.
Yep.
Maybe he can't. But you should find out this season
to
try to pull something, to try to salvage something
from this
absolute, you know, dumpster fire.
Yeah, Flacco was a joke, like you said. Dillon Gabriel in his preseason action had juice. I mean, that's the best way I can put it. I mean,
good way to put it.
Whether or not
I watched a lot of him, actually ended up doing that.
Yeah, whether or not that translates into regular season NFL football, you know, that, I mean, it's a very tough ask. Your first start on the road is in Europe, and it's against this damn Vikings defense, which is among the best in the NFL, if not the best in the NFL. So I expect struggles early on out of the gate. I don't know, you know, if he plays well against the Vikings, obviously it's a great sign. If he doesn't play well against the Vikings, you know, nobody plays well against the Vikings.
I sat here and said Jackson Dart had no chance against the Chargers.
Yeah,
and I looked like a dang fool.
You're right.
After
I mean,
game,
so. Sometimes, you know, the great ones can show themselves early. But I do think, yes, you know, you give Dillon Gabriel, you know, I don't know, six games, eight games, and then see, kind of go from there. And then if you feel like, hey, he hasn't gotten better, he hasn't improved, then I would say, why not? I mean,
if the team takes off under him, though, you don't go to Shedeur, right? I guess that was ideally you could play it out, look at the rest of the season. Browns ain't going to be anything. Play both of them, see what you got.
But if
this dude takes off like Jackson Dart, and to use your word, the juice comes with him to this team, okay, well, then you just say, we got your guy. Hey, Shedeur, you're going to be the backup for the time being. If you ain't cool with it, so be it.
Well, they actually announced that Shedeur is still the third. Flacco is the current backup.
Well, I mean, this dude's got eight turnovers.
He's terrible. He's so terrible.
Leads the league.
He's done.
Like,
he's
toast. Putting him back out there,
yeah.
You should release Shadur
yeah.
at that point. I don't know. Maybe you think you're helping mature him by keeping him in that third spot. Probably you're just getting more of a malcontent if you do it.
Right,
again,
right.
This was the decision to yeah. draft this dude in the fifth round after you took Dylan in
that's
the
right.
third.
That's right.
You were setting yourself up for this
no,
foolishness.
No, you were.
That's the only thing I would. If you're not bumping him up to two because of Joe Flacco with his eight turnovers and you're trying to teach him, that goes back to you and you never should have drafted him in the first place.
Right.
That seems silly, but I get it. And I agree, reconsideration. If the kid takes off, which you don't, you let him have it. Because
yep.
he could come with that Jackson Dart juice.
Yep.
He really could. The team could get behind him.
Yeah, Stefanski, he declined to explain why he wasn't making centers the backup. Said he only said that Joe's the backup.
They just handle everything wrong, bro.
Well, I don't know if they felt pressure to draft Shadur. They clearly didn't want to draft Shadur. They should have not drafted Shadur. You know, because he even had that great first game against the Panthers in preseason, and I was like, oh, man, this dude is, you know, going to be, you know, he's going to be the guy. And, look, it's hard. It's hard being an NFL quarterback. Like, it takes time, and it's not always automatic for people to come into it. Sometimes it can be. Like, even Bryce. Like, I still don't know about Bryce Young. Like, is he an NFL quarterback? Some weeks, I feel like he is.
I don't think so.
Some weeks, I don't.
But there's a way to handle it. I mean, Patrick Mahomes comes in the league. He plays behind Alex Smith, right? And he waits his turn. And Patrick Mahomes, great one. Patrick Mahomes, they moved up right
yep.
in the draft to get. He waited. And, Shadur Sanders is not so.
Right.
He's a child of God, just like we all are.
That's
but
right.
he ain't so above us that he should be different there. If
yep.
Patrick Mahomes can wait. And that was the word. He's, you know, telling Ozzie Newsome and these, you know, folks that he didn't want to be behind Lamar. You have an impatient kid who feels like I've been crowned, put me in. And that is not the attitude of a professional athlete.
Mm-hmm.
It just, you can have that attitude if you're untouchable.
Mm-hmm.
But he's not untouchable. And he's continued to have the attitude. It is toxic in the NFL. You can't be, they won't keep you in locker rooms like that. Your own guys that like you in the locker room, the ones they will turn on you because, brother, it's about putting food on the plate, bro. It's a league for men who have earned the chance.
Yep.
You know, despite whatever that name on the back of your jersey says.
Yep.
And he just acts like, you know.
Yep. I agree.
A birthright is the way he acts it. And I wish it was different.
The majority of his life, that's what it has been.
Because I feel like there's a good quarterback in there. I really
right.
do.
I
but
agree.
But I think maybe his attitude and his arrogance will keep us from ever seeing it. That's my fear.
Yep, I totally agree. A couple other NFL notes before we move on to the next one, Jason. Jaden Daniels medically cleared. He's coming back. I know that's exciting. Commanders need him. Big week this week against the Chargers on the road.
Yep.
Trey Benson, Arizona Cardinals running back, underwent arthroscopic knee surgery this morning.
Already lost Connor.
Already lost
now
Connor.
Now you lose Benson, who everybody was so high on.
Right. Now you're on to
DeMarcado
and Michael Carter. So
Marcado's better as a touchdown vulture as opposed to a main back.
DeMarcado. Yeah. I mean, he'll be a guy that he'll catch a lot of passes, you know, but
you can't run him every down is my point.
Right. They won't. And he'll be a second, third down kind of guy, passing situation, you know. But bad news there, no doubt for the Cardinals who I'm not sure where they're going anyway, but, definitely not good news. So, anyway, that is the latest in the NFL. I mean, I can't believe we haven't talked about this yet. I mean, this is really right up your alley, man. Because this weekend, Dwayne The Rock Johnson makes his pitch for best actor this year for an Oscar.
What?
The Smashing Machine.
Oh.
The Smashing Machine is coming out in theaters this weekend.
I've seen the preview for that.
I'm going to go see it.
Trailer, I guess.
And, you know, The Rock has lost a lot of weight. It's been talk, right? Everybody's talking about how much weight he's... I mean, he really did the method acting for this. You know, he got into great shape for this, better shape than ever before, really leaned out to be this guy. This Mark Kerr is the guy's name. And it's one of those A24 films, right? So when you think about A24, it's, you know, it's the artsy movies, you know? It's like...
Oh.
The movies that are always, you know, the Uncut Gems was A24, you know, like the really truly think about, you know, the films of the 21st century. You know what I mean? The art, they're behind this. So Listen, not only am I going to go see the movie, he is going to be nominated, most likely, for an Oscar. The Rock, Dwayne The Rock Johnson, who has been subjected to so much, I got to say, Venom on this show, is about to get an Oscar nomination for Best Actor as a result of this movie. He is a 53% favorite on Kalshi to be nominated for there's a lot of nominees, right? Michael B. Jordan's going to be a nominee. Leonardo DiCaprio's going to be a nominee. Timothy Chalamet is going to be a nominee. He ain't going to win, unfortunately. But, you know, I think what this is going to do, and I think there's no doubt about that, is when he gets that nomination, it's going to change some hearts and it's going to change some minds. Because some people on this show, and I don't want to say any names, but some people on this show think of him as the Tooth Fairy. You know, they think of him as the Gridiron Gang, you know, the big goofy dumb guy. Yep. who plays one. And you know what? Not going to say that's unfair. I'm not even going to say that's unfair. Scorpion King, Hercules.
As an actor, he's been awful.
Let me give you one right here. How about this? Who could forget his line in The Mummy? Haku Mashente! Who could forget that? I didn't. It launched an entire career.
And so you're telling me that he's playing a wrestler.
He's playing a UFC fighter. He's playing a UFC fighter, and he's playing that UFC fighter so well.
You're right. That's a stretch.
That's going to be nominated for Best Actor.
They gave him the cauliflower ear and all that stuff?
They did his makeup.
They spend 3 hours in makeup on him, Jason.
Okay. Well, that's impressive.
It's quite an undertaking. I saw it on the CBS Sunday Morning, did a whole vignette on this.
Yeah. Here's the thing. We'll see.
So the makeup and effects sound great.
He still has to act.
That's what I'm seeing.
Yeah,
so we still have to get a role out, a performance out of this that we don't know is going to level up and be commensurate with the what they've done with the special effects and all the makeup.
It's an emotional role. It's a roller coaster
UFC,
role.
Though.
Emily
not,
Blunt
UFC,
is in it
wrestler.
Too, so it's, you know, they got the heavyweights in there, literally.
Well, he's worked with Emily Blunt, as you know,
from,
as you'll remember, from the Jungle Cruise.
I've heard.
Okay, so they already have a rapport, you know, together. So they.
What's the one where they jump in the video game?
That's Jumanji.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, again,
another one is big one.
It was a big one.
It was in one of the Fast and Furious series.
Yeah, the Hobbs and Shaw spinoff. I mean, you can say what you want about The Rock, and he's almost become a caricature over the years because we're so overexposed to The Rock. It's just the truth.
He's pulled back a little bit, though. Yeah,
he'll be nominated.
That was part of my complaint.
Yeah.
Brad's got him nominated. Brad has.
He watched the special.
I watched 20 minutes on this.
He watched 20 minutes on it. And
I'm going to be honest with you. I'm going to be on real, and you're going to think I'm dumb and naive because I hadn't read anything about this. I saw the trailer. I had no idea that was The Rock.
No, because the makeup is ridiculous.
I had no idea that man I was looking at, looking in the mirror in that thing with the cauliflower ear, was The Rock.
It's
wild. I didn't know. I saw the movie. I didn't know The Rock was in the movie.
Yeah. The Rock Johnson. You know, The Rock.
So it looks crazy.
Was fantastic. And
I'm with you on this.
Thank you, Brad. I need some team. I need a team.
Yeah, let's see the performance first.
How about Maui and Moana? I mean, I think that was a great voice acting performance.
Oh, no, you.
That sounds just like him, don't I?
Well, yeah.
That's his tone. Oh, la, 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 la. It's right there all the time.
Yeah, I mean, that's what he
Dude,
does.
Dude, why does it look like I'm offending you talking about
I'm not
about
offended.
It?
I'm not offended. But I think
listen,
he
doesn't
graduated.
Know you.
He does
you know
him,
that.
But he has graduated.
You had a chance to meet him. It didn't happen.
It wasn't really a chance. It wasn't really that much of a chance.
What are you talking about?
When he was doing
about?
The Young Rock thing?
Yes.
That was not that
he
much.
He was in Midtown.
Yeah, but he wasn't accessible. It wasn't like I can just walk up to him.
I'm just saying. Oh, you know what? He did respond to one of your tweets, which is something
He did it twice.
That's the reason for the close connection and the reason when I'm critical of The Rock, it's being taken personally across the table. I think that's where you have to separate yourself.
Oh, I can't.
You are no longer holding his draws. You have risen to a height now where you don't have to do that and try to get his notice.
I think
you understand.
You are your own star. He has risen.
You're your own star.
He has risen. The reason why I got into entertainment, and this is a true story, is because of The Rock, man. The reason why I wanted to do anything in entertainment is because of his promos. Because his promos were so good, they were so quick-witted, they were so sharp that I was like, one day I want to be able to do the equivalent of that somehow, some way. Maybe not wrestle. Because I'm not going to be 6'5", 275, but if I could just get on a mic somehow, man, and I could just do what I could do, cut my jib
la,
that
la,
way.
La, la, la. Hip you smell!
Jabroni beating, halal, pie eating, trail blazing, eyebrow raising, most hated, Oscar nominated, The Rock.
That's the best thing he does.
I mean, that is, you know, that's a point, right? That's a plateau that many of your favorite actors are never going to reach, right? Who is your guy? Kevin Hart. He ain't never going to be Oscar nominated, man.
Kevin Hart.
He ain't never going to be Oscar nominated. Who else you got over
he
there?
He was in Jumanji right beside him, dude.
Who else you got over
you
there?
You forget. Probably got paid more. Who knows? Kevin Hart's doing just fine.
No, I'm just saying.
Yeah, and believe me, I ain't going to take it personally. You taking shots at Kevin Hart, so try again.
I don't know, because like you're a big Denzel guy. I can't really go there. But I'm trying to think, like, there's got to be.
Again, you oh,
you
don't bring Denzel into this. No. That is a thespian
not Idris, but is that his brother or is that his son? The other Elba. He ain't had no Oscar nomination. The dude from Snowfall. Mm. He ain't had that yet. How about the dude, Daniel Kaluuya? Has he been Oscar? I think he actually might have been nominated.
Get Out.
Yeah, whatever. he might have actually.
The other one, that he did another one too that I think he might have got.
Yeah, he actually might have been. That's a bad example. But again, who would have ever thought when we started this show 5, 6, 7, 8, 10 years ago that The Rock would one day be nominated for Best Actor? Now, it hasn't happened yet. But it's. I mean, obviously, you probably can get this movie on the Super Box.
I'm sure I will.
So
be
will
able
you?
To
will
very
you?
Soon.
Will you give it a shot?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, Oscar nominated.
For the,
Dwayne
for
the Rock
special Rock? Effects alone, but as much as you've hyped this up, we got the 53% that from Kaushi that thinks he's going to be nominated. I feel like I got to tune in now.
Yeah.
I've been tied to it. It's obligatory.
My bet is you're going to watch it.
You pumped this up enough.
My bet is you're going to watch it, and you're going to come in here and you're going to say, "I did not know that The Rock had that kind of range."
UFC fighter, what you
mean? I mean, it's in the same family, but I mean, I think it's more about, like, apparently this Mark Kerr person, whoever he was, had like a very turbulent life.
Like many of the UFC fighters and wrestlers do.
Yeah, so I think, you know, him, you know, acting that out will be the revel. That's my guess. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe you'll come in here and say you weren't impressed. The makeup job was good and the effects were good, but the acting job itself.
He could be poor.
You know, he could. I mean, he's never really played a role like that. Every role he's gotten has kind of been the same typecast, right? Maui from Moana, you know. What was the one he did with Kevin Hart where he was like the agent, the police officer? I don't remember what it was called, but it was like the same,
Trash.
You know, same gist, you know, Jumanji, you know, it's all kind of the same. This is different for him. But apparently the early returns are that it's the best he's ever done. So I look forward to you watching it and enjoying it. But I think much like you perceive of me, which is to have graduated, I think Dwayne has graduated here, and I look forward to you attending the ceremony whenever it's available on Superbox.
You grown man now.
The Smashing Machine, 2025, Dwayne The Rock Johnson.
You no longer have to do this.
Can you smell it?
I've got another, and it's not about The Rock. It's about Jonathan Kuminga signing a 2-year deal, $48.5 million with the Warriors. The Athletic called it a staring contest, and that's essentially what it was. It was a restricted free agent forward, Kuminga was. And he gets it done with a team that I don't even know if he's got the respect of his head coach and Steve Kerr. You know, because we've seen it. Jonathan Kuminga's played himself right out of the rotation at times. He sometimes feels like a square peg in a circular hole or the other way around, however that phrase works. That's what it feels like. And at the end of the year, you know, when they were broken up, they kind of threw him out there and said, just do your one-on-one thing. That's the issue for Jonathan Kuminga, or it has been with Golden State, is what he does, which is basically take over the ball, has to be. It goes against Golden State's system, which is constantly that ball moving and everything else. And yet they've decided to stick with him, agreed to a deal. I don't know if you saw it too, John. It was certainly less news, but they also brought in Steph's brother.
I did see that. They're going to waive him, and then they're going to re-sign him in November.
There you go.
Yeah, to something with the cap.
Best brother tandem to have played together.
There aren't many.
Not the Antetokounmpos.
No. Even though Giannis is doing much of the work there.
The Holidays, I know I'm getting, but I'm talking about on the same team.
Drew and Justin?
There are three of them, aren't there?
Yeah.
And so at some point, I think they've crossed paths, but like we're talking same team, same time. So it's tougher. Usually it's a bum, right? At the end of the bench. Like in the
Powell and Mark never played together, right?
I know, right? Mm-hmm. Other than the All-Star game.
Yeah.
Or where do they tip off against each other? Whatever it was.
Yeah, they tipped off against each other.
Yeah, it's not same team, if I remember correctly. So this was a stumper. I didn't go look. Was there somebody just immediately that I was thinking?
Dominique and Gerald Wilkins?
I don't remember much about Gerald Wilkins.
Gerald was at one point thought of as a Jordan stopper. Now it was a joke. That's who the Knicks employed to do it. Were they ever on the same team would be the question.
Did they play on the Hawks together? I'm not sure.
And Seth ain't some great player, but he is a fine shooter. He is a fine shooter. And as John said, he's expected to be back with Golden State.
Mm.
Once they can get around the is it circumventing the salary cap? No, they're doing it per league rules, different than what the Clippers are doing. But still, to have those two together on the same team, John said it's rare when you do it, and probably even rarer when they're both. One of them is a freaking walking legend.
Right.
But Seth, pretty decent, still a solid shooter.
Good player.
Not doing what he's done the last couple of years, obviously. But
You have the Wagner brothers there in Orlando.
No, they're good.
That's the pair right there.
Currently, because I think Mo is not a bad backup NBA player. Like he's
better than Seth Curry is at this stage.
Probably
they would take as a combination,
right?
The Wagner.
Well, there's never like the other brother's never that good.
That's my point.
They're always just sort of good.
Yeah. So there's like if you just go like by the best, like you'd say Steph and Seth because the best is the better than anybody else.
Yeah.
Or Giannis, if you want to go Giannis is better than anybody else, then you could go that group. But, Thanasis is awful. I mean, he can't play for his national team.
That's why I kind of give the edge to the Wagner brothers.
Yeah, because at least Mo, when he plays, is, he's serviceable. Like, he's a real backup NBA big man.
Yeah.
He's hurt right
Better than where Seth is, who you think can be a backup guard for you, a backup shooter. But often now, at this point, his career has had to be pulled off.
Yeah. Zoran Dragic and Goran Dragic. They played together, but I don't think Zoran was ever anything. It's just kind of funny that.
No, it's a good one.
It's just funny that Zoran and Goran.
The Holiday's not on your list there? Well, they're never.
Yeah, they are. There's two sets, like you said. There's Aaron Holiday and Justin Holiday. So it's Aaron, Justin, and Drew.
I was going to say, there's one more.
It's Justin Holiday, Aaron Holiday, and Drew. And Justin and Aaron played together. For the Pacers.
I thought they had crossed, some of them had crossed paths.
Justin and Drew had played together for the 76ers.
Okay.
So, there you go. There's not really an extensive list of brothers who teamed up and played together. I don't know. I'm sure the Thompson twins will do it at some point when they become free agents, if it works out that way.
They might try it, and boy, was that team be excellent defensively.
But, both of them are kind of like taking off in their respective franchises, right? Like, Assar had a nice playoffs for the Pistons, and then Amen is, playing really well for the Rockets. So it seems like they'll probably both get paid by their respective franchises.
I would think so.
The Ball brothers never teamed up.
Nope.
Or haven't to this point.
Nope.
Maybe they will at the end, but yeah, it just doesn't seem to really work out that way. Seth is a serviceable shooter.
He still is.
Yeah.
But I don't know that he can be that for, any extended amount of time. And he's on the downside.
Did he play at all last year?
Last time I remember,
Philly? He played 68 games last year for Charlotte.
Charlotte.
He averaged 6.5 points a game.
See, it's come down.
46% from three, though.
But he's not used because defensively he's going to kill you.
Yeah.
That's the issue.
Like, 2022.
Yeah, how many years ago was it that,
he was with Brooklyn, and he was averaging, 15 a game, and he was shooting 47% from three.
Yeah, I'm right. He's come down significantly.
I mean, he's a great shooter.
Always has been.
Yeah. He just, for whatever reason, he's just been a journeyman. I guess because he can't guard at all. He's undersized. Like, just a tough.
And you can't keep him out there as your lead ball handler like Kansas
right.
Steph.
Tough match. Tough match. But anyway, so Al Horford there in Golden State, right?
Oh, that's right. They're expected to bring him in, too. A couple of more vets, I thought. Al Horford, somebody else, I thought.
That's a team where I'm not really sure. I saw more tweets about Jonathan Kuminga this year than any player in the history of the NBA. Like, I swear to God, it was more tweets about his free agency and or trade than it was LeBron's in 2010. I'm like, can you guys just please decide what you're going to do with this guy? I mean, who cares if he's going to go? It's like the Kings or the Warriors. It's like every week it'd be different. But the Warriors are not sure what they're going to do with Kuminga. The Warriors are leaning towards trading Kuminga. The Warriors are leaning towards pay. This guy is a big block, right? He's a big block. And maybe if he gets to the right coach who believes in him, the right team that believes in him, You can chisel that rock into a great player someday. But right now he's just like he's on go mode. He just is, you put him out there, go score 20 points and give up 17. I mean, that's what Jonathan Kuminga is.
The Kings and the Suns were interested in doing a deal for him. And for some reason, Golden State said no.
Yeah, I mean, look, he's going to score. He will give you that. But he's not like a great decision maker. He's not a great defender. He looks the part. But obviously, there's some level of belief in that organization to give him $24 million a year.
I mean, you can't contain him one-on-one.
No,
he's like, when you throw him the ball, he's a bucket. But the problem is you can't put him in your system.
That's exactly right.
Because he needs it. He can't, he can't be playmaker, everything else. He's looking to score it every time he gets it.
Yes.
So that's why a Phoenix or a Sacramento that's got nothing right now would be willing to go after a guy like that.
Yeah.
They're not running anything other than for Booker in Phoenix or whatever else. And Sacramento's been, it's being rebuilt, whatever the heck it is right now. So he makes way more sense there than he does. Kerr's not changing the structure. They're not going to change how they play. So how he is impactful within it, I don't see.
Yeah, I mean, I think he's such an interesting case because I'm reading the facts about this. He's one of eight players from that 2021 draft class that has 3,000 points and 1,000 rebounds. Like, he's been one of the top eight most productive players from that draft. But with that being said, he seems to never produce unless Steph is out. I mean, he doesn't, and that's when he shined with the Timberwolves. He was out of the rotation against the Rockets. Then Steph gets hurt. He becomes like the main scorer.
Yeah, they need a go-to guy.
And because Jimmy can't do it at this stage in his career. And then he kind of started to cook.
You got to be able to play with Steph, bro, when you're in that organization.
Exactly. I think they kind of tricked themselves here. You know, like, they're going to pay this guy $22.5 million, hoping that something changes with him. But I just think it's one of those deals where he needs to go to a place where he has the undisputed green light.
Where it's wide open.
And that's what is expected of him. And if that's expected of him and the roles, and everybody agrees on that, he could be a contributor. You know what I'm saying? He could. Like, I could actually see he could be a huge help with the Grizzlies. Now, they think Cedric Coward might be this on some level, right? Like, they obviously draft him and think he can, be a better defensive player, better defensive player and all those things. But, if he just has to get to the right place where nobody's going to be disappointed, right?
Mm-hmm.
Hey, this is who I am. Don't ask me to be something I'm not. I'm Jonathan Kuminga. Don't ask me to be Anthony Edwards or whatever,
Only way I can see it working is if when you're pulling your big guy, your older, Draymond, Steph off the floor, what you're willing to go to is just say, hey, with our second unit, that's Kuminga's.
Yep.
Do your thing.
And it should be, really. But
you pull the structure off right there. That's the only reason you get anything out of this deal for him.
Exactly.
Because he doesn't work on the floor with Steph. It just doesn't happen. That's why.
We've been down there.
Yeah.
But apparently this is just like a setup to the next deal. Like, this is like they can trade him. Starting January 15th.
They've had chances.
Yeah.
Maybe they didn't like enough what Phoenix and what I guess it was Sacramento.
So, they are hoping that he has a great first, 3 months of the season and then can flip him on a tradable deal. They can get something back for him. So, it's certainly not a long-term commitment, but they did pay him finally. So, at least we can close that chapter with Kuminga and the Warriors. All right, we'll come back. Jeff Cogg is going to join us at 1:25. We'll talk to him about Memphis basketball and more. Stick around. Jason and
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
John, I turn FM, ESPN. All right, got another weekend of college football just around the corner. Tomorrow's Thursday, which means we'll have past hump day. And we'll be on another college football weekend sooner than later. Memphis football hosting the vaunted Tulsa Golden Hurricane. Only 20.5-point favorites. You always got to watch out. You always got to watch out for those traps, man. But you pointed out to me during the break that Memphis's defense is reaching heights rarely seen for this bunch.
Up to 55th in the country at SP Plus. Guys, that's significant improvement from last season. We've discussed it, and we probably haven't spent enough time on it. We've talked a lot about that Memphis offense and what they're doing with the ground game. We've touched on the job that Jordan Hankins is doing. Last year, 80th. This year, 55th. Now, they got an offense that's 11th. 11th in the country. That would be three straight years, and we're talking in offensive efficiency. Obviously, they're doing it a different way, not through the air in the same way that they did with Seth Hennigan. But you're talking about three straight years of top 15, top 13-ish offenses. And now you're adding a defense that, keep in mind, 2 years ago was in the, you know, 110s. Gone to 80, gone to 50. And if Ryan Silverfield right now, if that defense finished at 55th, would be the second best in terms of defensive efficiency defense that he's had. His first year, he was 52nd. His first year, he was 52nd. His average has been what he was last year, 80th. So to jump to 55, 25 spot jump from last season, for now, maybe it even gets better, you know, in the American in terms of where your numbers could go. This has been just as much a part of the story, the 5-0 story for Memphis football, as the offense has. So, again, a tip of the cap to Jordan Hankins.
Yeah.
And the defensive improvement, not just turnovers, not just tackles for loss. They are playing a more efficient, more physical brand of football up front.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the thing. Is like, it appears to be real, as opposed to last year, it ended up being kind of smoke and mirrors. I don't want to crown too early, because it's
the big difference in the numbers from last year to this year. Yeah. Is that defensive number. You're 11th offensively in the country, 55th defensively, and you're 21st in special teams. All of it adds up to 31st. That's your spot in the SP Plus rankings. And I've looked at it. I mean, you're the highest ranked Group of Five team at this point by far. And so, well, not by far. Navy's down there at 40th. They're sitting at 4-0. But at 31, you've separated yourself.
Pretty amazing.
In terms of the Group of Five. And keep in mind, the AAC has separated itself with the work it's done as a whole.
Yeah.
Just got to go win the dang thing now.
I mean, 11th in offense, you know, for Memphis. Like you said, 55th in defense. Special teams top. You know, I mean, they're just well coached across the board. You know, like that was another thing that I meant to mention in my piece that I wrote after the FAU game. It's like every time on a kick, like, nobody gets past the 30 on the kickoff. You know, like Memphis's special teams is extremely disciplined.
Kicker's been good too.
Kicker, dude, they found that kicker, the Spedek. Mm-hmm. That was a problem last year. Mm-hmm. They were cycling through, you know, the kickers they had last year.
After you'd had a good run of guys that went on to the NFL, just saw Riley Patterson's with somebody, different team this year. Yeah, Dolphins, that's right.
Yeah. I mean, that's the mark of a well coached team, right? Is like all phases, special teams, offense, and defense.
I mean, you essentially got all three in the top 50. That's quality.
Yeah.
To do it across the board. Again, on this defensive improvement, I told you he averaged 80th for his 5 years, 52nd's the best he's been his first year in defensive efficiency. They're 55. Now, here's the number. 2020, 52nd. 2021, 78th. 22, 80th. 2023, that's the lowest point before you go and get Hankins. It was 111th. 24 last year, we told you, was 80th. So to get back up to 55th, second highest mark he's ever been, with the chance to go higher defensively, again, the Tigers have been super impressive. And it has to continue. And the way it plays out, here's what you hope is the difference. One or two stops more against South Florida. One or two stops more against Navy and Tulane. That's what it's going to take. And I think physically this team's built now in a way, and you have to give Ryan Silverfield credit because you had to replace essentially the whole defense. I think it's built in a way where you're getting those stops. The ones you couldn't get last year against Navy in UTSA when you were the 80th ranked defense.
Right.
So, Memphis football fun right now.
It is.
The numbers look real good. The numbers back it all up that this is, you know, this isn't just hope here. This is something that hopefully will come to fruition.
No, I mean, it seems to be. But, you know, again, you got South Florida on the 25th. You got Tulane. You got Navy. I didn't realize Navy would have been ranked so high.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's kind of just surprising.
Their numbers, especially, you know, they're going to be so efficient.
Yeah.
All the time.
USF what's, all the what's way that at 64.
Navy offense? Navy offense 34th. Their defense is right ahead of you at 54th. Their special teams is 122nd.
So how do
See,
you
it's
get
hard to,
40?
To have all three phases.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And you're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of Browns
You know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys?
Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos.
Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.